This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
With John, he's another person who's been a great commander, a great person for this franchise, and he's going in the last year of his deal, and he's talked about it and said wanted to be able to explore opportunities, and so we let them do that, and we're staying in contact with them, you know, like every day. Just texted with them this morning, and you know, really everything's still on the table in terms of whether it's a trade or staying here, or we're still going through that. It's kind of early in the stages. We haven't done a lot of exploring yet, but that's kind of where we're at right now.
That is Adam Peters on Jonathan Allen, defensive lineman, interior defensive lineman, who could be available via trade or also could just be cut loose. We are getting to players asking for trades season rather than be cut, and Jonathan Allen is on the list.
And we'll talk more about him now with Craig Hoffman, 4-7 weekdays on the Team 980 covering the Commanders. Craig, Joe, and Jeremy, thanks for coming out again.
You got it. How are you guys doing?
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad. How good an idea is Allen at this stage in his career, 1 year left on his deal for a team that would be acquiring him?
John's an interesting guy in that he is definitely a good player, but he's fairly unique in terms of like the fits that I would like if I was searching for him, right? So if you want him to be a big block-eating defensive tackle who allows your linebackers to flow freely, he's not your guy. And that's why I think he is no longer – the main reason he is no longer desired here is he's a guy that is a penetrator, is a little undersized. He has some pretty good pass rush shoes, not as good as he did when he was younger, but still has some of that. And, like, that's a useful player. Like, interior defensive line disruption is something that a lot of teams are obviously looking for. But you have to be able to do it within a scheme. I think at times he plays out of scheme. He's not – like, for as disciplined as he is on his – nutrition and all the like professional stuff, I don't know how disciplined he always is on the field. He'll go try to make the play himself, and that just didn't really fit with, hey man, just like do what you're supposed to do and Bobby Wagner will make the tackle. He's really good at it. And so that I think on the football end of it is kind of why they're divorcing here. But if you are looking for a playmaking defensive tackle with a little bit of gas left in the tank and you can get him at a cheaper rate than obviously Washington wants to pay him, and for a team acquiring him via trade, like you don't have to worry about the signing bonus proration. So that number's like $15 million, where Washington would be paying him, you know, his cap number is 22 in D.C. this year. He's worth poking around at.
How much was the scheme change a thing that changed it? Because, you know, going back a couple of years, I feel like I can remember him being not quite a household name, but among defensive tackles thought of as one of the premier guys in the league.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how their defensive line has evolved, and not to get too Washington-centric for your Bills audience, who's just like, hey, should we sign him or not? I think that like the way they had built it initially when he was here, like he was a featured guy, and they then drafted Daron Payne next to him, and those two guys were kind of the guys, and they drafted Montez Sweat outside, and Montez was a good complimentary piece. And then they draft Chase Young, and they go four straight years on the defensive line in the first round, and now you have all these guys that all want to make the plays, and it's just too many, I don't want to say stars, because I don't know that any of them like actually rise to star player, but like too many stars and not enough role players, not enough guys that were willing to just say, like, hey, I'll eat this block. I'll play off of you. They didn't communicate well up front. So there was some of that that had already started to happen previously. And then it was more accentuated, I think, this year when, you know, John and Duran are the last two guys left. And then he gets hurt early in the year. And that was a pec injury that we thought was going to be the end of him in D.C. And he actually came back and played decently well in the final couple of games. But you saw when he went out, the defense got better. And some, who knows, like, could they have made some adjustments with him in? So it's not saying, like, it got better because he went out, but some of the issues they were having where he would try to backdoor a play or whatever, and all of a sudden you have this huge gap on the front side and everyone's yelling at the safety, like, why didn't you make the tackle? And it's like, well, Jeremy Chinn is a very good tackling safety, but he's not going to make a play in an 8-yard wide gap because he's not a superhuman. And, like, if John Allen had just done his job, that gap is what it's supposed to be, and Chinn will make that play every time. And so I think some of it was schematic and what they were asking him to do. I think some of it is he has distinct ideas. And this gets into another, I think, important part and why plays like Buffalo's intriguing, right? Buffalo's got a strong locker room, the way they do things, whatever, that's already established. Here, he has been a captain and a leader and all that stuff for a long time. And when things change around you and you still kind of think that you should be in charge, like, there can be friction there. And I think there was some of that this year in D.C. So I think that that was part of it, too, is like he has distinct ideas of how he wants to play. And felt like he had enough leverage to try to implement those. And I don't know that the coaching staff always agreed with that assessment.
Craig Hoffman with us on the Wester Hotline. I don't know that he was ever like the biggest, maybe not as big a name as he deserved to be. When he was at his best, like how good was he? Like, and that's probably what, 3 years ago-ish that he was really playing at his peak?
Yeah. Somewhere between 2 and 4 years ago, there's multiple peaks in there, you know, multiple game stretches where he was really good. I mean, he was a Pro Bowl player, like, no doubt about it. Not an all pro. So that line obviously is distinctive where it's like, he's not one of the best two guys, three guys at the position, but is he one of the best eight? Yeah. At his best, he was. And, that's obviously a really good player in terms of now, like, I'd be stunned if he made a Pro Bowl. I guess if he's on the team like the Bills, who's, you know, one of the best teams in the league, and he goes out and has a good sack season. And that's the other thing too, right? Is like, there's underlying data, and this is actually a more interesting conversation on Daron Payne, but I'll use Payne real quick as an illustrator. Like, Daron Payne has basically been a very consistent player throughout his entire career. His pressure rate is the exact same for basically every year within like 0.5%. The 1 year he was in a contract year, for whatever reason, that pressure rate paid off in 11 sacks. He got paid. And, like, Allen, I think, has been one of those guys, too, where, like, he's pretty consistent. The production can go up and down based off other circumstances, but he's not one of these guys that just figures out how to produce it, you know, the way that, you know, obviously everyone's talking about Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett, his pressure rate's consistent, so is the sack rate. Allen's one of these guys that's a tier down at his peak and probably two tiers down now, where circumstance is going to affect production in a much larger way.
Craig Hoffman joining us in the Wester Hotline on the Commanders. On Myles Garrett, you know, these two teams, Bills and Commanders, not linked by much, but, you know, championship game losses and also potential Garrett pursuit. Do you think Washington would seriously go in on this? Would you view it as hitting fast forward a bit? I mean, you're entering Jaden Daniels, the year he just had, and the expectations in Washington, I'd imagine, have shifted greatly. So is it a very quick, yes, let's go get it?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it is. And I laugh at some of our fan base who is like, oh, you have to take it slow. I'm like, you were in the NFC Championship game. The only team to beat the Eagles after week 5 was you. What are you waiting for? And not to say that this team is like perfectly built. I mean, the Bills have, for instance, a much better roster top to bottom than Washington does. And right now, Washington barely has a roster because they have 28 free agents, which I believe is second most behind Kansas City and the entire league. So they have a ton of guys they have to re-sign to even get back to the baseline of what last year was. But I think unlike a team like the Texans, one, the Texans' offensive structure, which ultimately ended with Bobby Slowick getting fired and their O-line coach getting fired, like, I'm not worried about that stuff with Washington in terms of a year two regression for Jaden Daniels in the way that C.J. Stroud, quote-unquote, had one. And C.J. definitely wasn't as good in year two as he was in year one, but his circumstances were god-awful. And two, I think that the way that this front office works, like, they're very, very in line with their coaching staff. They know exactly what they want. And I think that they played better football. And I think that's the last part with the Texans comparisons. Like, the Texans won a crap division and then, you know, won one playoff game. The Commanders were undefeated through the final, I think it was 7-game win streak at the end of the year. And then from like mid-November on. And then the only team that beat them was the eventual Super Bowl champions. And Washington, you know, the final score was pretty lopsided. But I think Washington actually played Philly closer in the playoffs than Kansas City, for instance, did in the Super Bowl. And so at that point, you have to look at yourselves and be like, okay, well, we know where we thought we might be, but like, what truly are we? And I think the answer is pretty good. But what's the difference between us and a great team? What's the difference between us and Philadelphia, us and Buffalo, us and Baltimore? And I think it's great players. And so if you feel confident that you can go find a bunch of more 7 out of 10 type of guys in free agency, and you can find those guys in the draft in the way that you did last year, what are you missing? The great ones. Go get Myles Garrett. Go get a great one. To me, it's so, so plainly obvious. Not that I'd, you know, do 3 first round picks for it, but if you're telling me you're picking 29 this year and 30 next year, fine.
Right.
Give up what's essentially 2 second round picks for Myles Garrett. You can make that up in other places in the draft. You can trade down and accumulate more picks. Like, there's other things that you can do to make that worthwhile.
Are you applying that same logic to a receiver potentially for Washington? Although, like, because I went into the offseason thinking about them for like T. Higgins, or if, you know, Metcalf would have shook loose. But I just maybe wonder if there's going to be a name that's worth, you know, all of that.
Yeah, I don't know at receiver, in part because they already have Terry, right? So they already have someone who is A-plus in the room in terms of his talent. And, I mean, at Terry, you know, we've always kind of been like, hey, we're pretty sure he's really good, but, man, his quarterbacks stink. And he has 1,000 yards every year anyway. And then this year he's with Jaden. He sets the franchise touchdown record in the first year together. So they've got Terry. They need to actually extend him. So there'll be a little bit of money going to that receiver room anyway. Now, because Jaden's on his rookie deal, like, they've got money to play with. You know, they've got a top 5 probably quarterback, top 8 quarterback on what, the 30th best deal in the league, or the 30th most expensive deal in the league, or whatever it is. So that's nice. But at the same time, like, getting more help, I think, is there. But I think for the receiver room, it's more of like, can you get the right guys to complement and fill in the offense? Now, I think the other one to watch in terms of receiver/weapon is, like, what happens in the tight end market. One, what happens with Zach Ertz for them here? He was great. He wants to be here, but he's going to cost more than he did last offseason because he's not coming off of Detroit's practice squad in the playoffs and being cut by Arizona or asking for his release in Arizona. He's coming off a, you know, a Pro Bowl-level season. But then, like, in the draft, I mean, they used a second rounder on a kid named Ben Sinnott last year out of K-State, and he didn't really play that well. So, and the type of receiver and type of tight end that he is, like, it's not the same as Ertz. And the Ertz piece proved really important. So whether it's Ertz himself or do they go, you know, another, if like Loveland falls in the draft, a kid out of Michigan somehow to 29, like, that's one where I don't know if you run the card up depending on what else is going on your board, but like, he'd be one of the guys you're considering, I would think. So another long story short, like, I do think the Commanders will be in the mix for some of these receivers. I look at a guy like Darius Slayton down the free agent list. Like, he seems like a very logical fit here to add some vertical speed. But there's other ways that I think they're going to add pop to this offense, and tight end and running back in the draft, I think, is another one that's fairly obvious. And that should be obvious for everyone this year, considering how many running backs are in this class.
We're always talking Bills and always talking receiver and often talking ideas and maybe bargain basement ideas. Is Diami Brown worth considering?
He is definitely worth considering. I don't know that he's going to be a bargain basement. That's kind of the issue here in Washington, is like, with the playoffs that he had, he was a 4-4-5 guy. He showed he could, like, catch screens and do real damage with them. Like, he showed a level of explosiveness. And especially, like, once he got into the wide receiver 2 role this year, which was, I want to say, like, week 9, week 10, maybe a little bit later, Noah Brown, who they had brought in from Houston after he got cut in the preseason, which is hilarious in hindsight. Not hilarious, but it's funny in hindsight, certainly, with how many receiver issues Houston had this year that Noah Brown, they cut. And he wound up being wide receiver 2 in Washington for much of the year until he got hurt. once Diami took that role over, he continually got better and better in it. He just continued to grow, get better, refine his professionalism. I think he'd always been a guy that worked hard, but like now he had good guidance from the coaching staff and you know, guys like Ertz who were an example of like what to actually apply that work ethic towards. And he just blossomed. And obviously in the playoffs, he was incredible. So I'm like terrified that, you know, I heard in the sports update you guys just had, like Shakir gets 15 a year. Diami Brown shouldn't get as much as Khalil Shakir, but I think that's a hell of an extension that the Bills signed Shakir to. And like, I'm nervous that he's going to be in that, you know, Darnell Mooney got $13 million last year.
Does
like,
he,
would you pay Diami Brown what you got, what Darnell Mooney got? And I think someone will.
Craig, does he play all over the place on the outside? Does he run down the field? You mentioned good speed. I mean, the Bills, Shakir is almost primarily slot, and this Bills team has been seeking more help on the outside. Is Brown a guy that plays on the boundary?
Yeah, he is. He's an outside guy. He can play inside some, but he's more of a vertical route runner, but he's really good at, you know, those like comebacks. He plays bigger than his size. So he's not huge. He's probably about 6 foot, but he plays like he's 6'2", 6'3", in terms of being able to be a reliable target on comebacks, hitches, obviously the goes down the field. His ball tracking is pretty good. As I said, he's a really good screen runner. That was something that Washington kind of figured out with him this year. This administration was like, you seem to, when you have the ball in your hands, run really physically. We should just put the ball in your hands. And he was great for them and what was a big part of their offense. And I'd say the other thing that is a great fit for Buffalo and is also a big deal for him here is he's a tremendous blocker. He was known as like the speedster go route guy coming out. And his first 3 years in Washington, the best thing he did by far was block. And so for the Bills who want to be a run-first football team and have that physical identity, like I do think he's a really, really good fit.
All right. Thanks, Craig.
You got it. Always good to be with you guys.
Yeah, perfect. We're going to roll right into the free agent idea of the day. Craig Hoffman covering the Commanders there. Because I had Diami Brown on a short list of guys to do. He was on a short list, and let me tell you how I found my way to bringing him up. So He's a former third-round pick. Did he go to North Carolina? Where's he from?
Sounds right, yeah.
Yes, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Free agent idea of the day, Diami Brown. So, the scouting report he just gave on him, doesn't that sound like a guy that is exactly what the Bills want?
Sounds exactly.
4-4 speed, plays on the outside, good in the screen game, hell of a blocker.
Yep.
And if you saw him in the playoffs, that's explosiveness, that's downfield stuff. He had a wide receiver two role. Maybe he comes a little bit expensive. I don't know. He doesn't have a huge resume. But, Joe, I was looking yesterday at Khalil Shakir's numbers because Shakir is getting a lot of credit as the yak king, which he deserves. He gets a lot of yak yards. There is, however, some Bills fans don't like me to point this out. A lot of that is built in for him. The throws he gets are short. He gets behind the line. He gets screens. He should have a lot of yak yards. Whereas a guy like, pick. The other guys that have good yak numbers, Ian Harditz put out a chart. It was like,
Does Brian Thomas Jr. up there?
He was not on this chart. It was CeeDee Lamb,
yeah.
Jamar Chase, Garrett Wilson, Puka Nacua.
Okay, so like the best receivers of the sport.
Right, but those guys are all what? Boundary guys going down the field. Shakir is much more of a slot guy, finding space and getting yak. So Shakir he's good. I think a lot of what he does is a function of the offense. The offense is kind of built around him. Anyway. So I was looking up yards after catch per reception, NFL leaders in this department, who does what, average depth of target. And what I came to was I found Shakir's yards before contact,
yards after contact or yards after reception?
I've got to pull up exactly what I was looking at. The point is, it was average yards before catch. That's what it was. Yards before catch. Where Shakir was at 2.9 yards before catch.
Right.
Right below him was Curtis Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, two guys in the same offense running the same type of stuff. Right below him, Diami Brown. The three of them grouped together in where they caught the ball. And the Bills like to be versatile, multiple. Can you find a free agent receiver who you can get on value and try and get a glow up? Hey, he showed a little bit there in Washington. Turns out we really liked this guy back in 2021, but will they take a running back instead or something where he's off the board? He's got the speed. He blocks. I'm just saying,
yeah.
That's not a terrible name to me. It's not a big move.
It's not. I mean, it.
But if you tell me they did a Darnell Mooney move, I like the Darnell Mooney move. Get a guy that's shown a little bit and put him in your offense where he can do more. I'm just saying, I think you could do worse than that idea.
I guess their skill sets do kind of are comparable. Mooney, though, like one big difference between Dyami Brown and Mooney is just we've seen, even before he signed in Atlanta, you saw him have some production. Like some. Mooney had a 1,000-yard season in Chicago.
Right. Brown's done very little, which is why it sounded like Craig Hoffman there was kind of surprised that Shakir got 15, and that's a big number
like,
for him.
Brown, I mentioned Mooney had a 1,000-yard season in Chicago. Brown has 784 yards in four seasons combined.
I know.
Like, there has not been much there.
That's kind of what
you watch him.
That's what I like about it, right? Like, shouldn't this be cheap?
I just don't know how much appetite I'm going to have for the Bills' idea receiver this year to be a guy that is on. I mean, Craig says it. Like, he had a great playoff, right? He was great in the playoffs. His playoff numbers, by the way, against Tampa, 5 for 5, 89 yards and a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
Against Detroit, 6 for 8, 6 receptions on 8 targets, 98 yards. And then against Philadelphia, he had 3 catches for 42 yards. So, I mean, he has many yards in the playoffs. He had 229 yards in the playoffs. That would have been his regular season high before this season.
Right.
So, okay, maybe a team sees what he did in the postseason and says, let's do that in the regular season now. The Bills' idea of like their receiver idea of the summer, though, being guy that has 700 yards in four seasons. Right. Like, I'm going to want to get to rolling my eyes at that again. This is up. Tell me how good Deonte Hardy is again.
Okay, ready?
Tell me how versatile Hold on. Trent Sherfield was.
Pretend his name is Mac Hollins.
Mac Hollins caught 300 yards.
I know, that's what I'm saying, and everybody wants him back. Pretend Dyami Brown's name is Mac Hollins. Isn't that a better idea?
Oh, I see. Yes. Yes.
So, quickly on Shakir.
If you put those two against, I love Mac Hollins, too. He's a super fun guy. It was a great experience, him being here for 1 year. I would take Dyami Brown over Mac Hollins right now.
Yards before catch per reception. Okay? This was the stat I was looking at.
Okay.
I'll let you know when I get the first receiver on the board because it's all running backs because they catch the ball behind the line of scrimmage, right? First receiver on the board, Marvin Mims. Funny enough.
Speed.
They throw him screens quite a bit. They finally unlocked him down the field, right?
Yep.
After that, Greg Dortch, Shakir, Dyami Brown, Curtis Samuel, Lil Jordan Humphrey, Troy Franklin, Wandale Robinson, Malik Washington, DJ Moore is the first, like, boundary receiver that you see get this number.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you could include Dyami Brown there too because he plays on the outside. Worthy 3.9. You just Shakir's targets come where running backs and tight ends get the ball. That leads to a lot of his yak. He's good at it. They again, if Joe Brady leaves, things might change quite a bit. They built a full-on yak offense, and now they need a little more. YBC, yards before catch. All right, there's your free agent idea of the day. Dyami Brown, courtesy of Craig Hoffman, who, again, that scouting report to me sounds like, that checks some boxes for a budget idea, which might not be that budgeted. Okay.
Like, he doesn't even have a SpotTrack market value page.
That's right.
He doesn't even have one. All like, you can't, like, hit market value on it.
Nothing's...
Oh, wait, sorry. Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
And?
Here you go. 1 year, $1.9 million.
That's Mac Hollins.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
All right. 803-0550 and 1-888-552-550. You know, it's still the receiver train, guys. Even if we're dipping deep into the Dyami Browns of the world, I probably tweeted about him in 2021 that I would have taken him.
Remember, it's a bullet train now. It's all about speed.
The Bills,
all about speed.
The
baby.
Bills' pursuit of a wide receiver with speed is kind of like how LaDainian Tomlinson played and went to the Hall of Fame through the entire drought. Like we're back on receivers that they already passed on once in a draft.
Right.
Hey, you should get a wide receiver. Oh, I didn't get that
we're
guy.
We're getting lapped now. Right. On the track.
Well, he's up for a second contract. How about now?
Right.
All right. 803-0550. 2021. That's not when they take Gabe. They take Gabe in like 2020.
Gabe is 2020. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
2021, in that draft, they took Spencer Brown in the third round. That looked pretty good. They took Boogie Basham in the second. Not so good.
Yeah. They didn't take a receiver that year?
They took Russo.
Was that the Ray McLeod year?
That is the Marquez Stevenson year.
Oh, where's that guy? What happened to him? He was fast, right?
He was.
He's playing
for the San Antonio Brahmas.
I remember being told when, like, hey, go for speed. Go for guys. Hey, Marquez Stevenson over here. He's got speed. Sixth round picks being my filler for, this is their speed, guys.
Isn't this
guy who is on the practice squad? He's fast. KJ Hamler, baby.
I hear KJ Hamler's name again. Yeah, right.
Andy Isabella.
It's funny that the Bills, Brandon Bean yesterday said, you can't just have track stars. And he goes out and signs track stars that are like seventh round picks to fill out the bottom half of the receiver core.
Right.
Anyway, all right, it's fine. Everything's fine. Diami Brown or we riot. No, other ideas, I'm sure. 803-0550 on WGR. Up next, we'll check what's going on in the chat because it's worth checking in on. Good morning to the chat on YouTube. The chat we're treating now as a character on the show. Sometimes you just wake up in the morning, you want to log into a YouTube chat of a radio show and start throwing bombs at Owen Power.
Nah. See, that's why I love it. We don't even have to mention a guy and just bam, everyone's fist fighting in the chat.
The chat is like, you know, you look out in your backyard and you see like, what are the dogs doing out there? And you just find out like, they're after something. All right, let's check out what's going on in the chat. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. I will say one thing about the YouTube stream, the Twitch stream, the chat in general. I'm going to be careful how I say this, feel more alive. Because you have to understand something. Joe, you would know this. You guys would know this. When you do the show, you know, we take calls and people call in.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes there's people on hold and sometimes there are not people on hold. And, you know, you get to the time of year where people listen more than they call. You know people are listening.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't see it in action.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah.
They might tweet you. They might. But on the chat, you see, like, there are people listening and commenting on every word we say. You say a name wrong, and the chat is like, actually, sir.
They're on it.
Actually, this is how that name's pronounced.
Actually, they're called short pants.
Right. Lots going on. In the chat today, Josh Allen was traded for Jaden Daniels.
Yeah. What?
In the chat today, you know, some good old-fashioned chatter about the Bills, of course.
Of course, the usual yelling about Owen Power being terrible.
Owen Power's back.
And being soft.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a daily, though, I think. The trading Allen thing just out of nowhere.
You know.
How often are people talking like that out there? It happens, right?
Trade Allen?
Every day. Somebody somewhere in a sports bar is like, hey, you know, trading for Jaden Daniels. Why not?
Last offseason, didn't somebody say the Bills should trade Josh for Caleb Williams?
Oh, did they?
It might have been Carton. That show is like,
oh, yeah.
That show tries to get things as wrong as possible
it
to go viral.
It was a Chicago podcast.
The Chicago guy? Okay. Yeah. All right. Who says no? It was like Allen and a first for Caleb Williams. Like, yeah.
We should try to find the worst Josh Allen trade proposals from anywhere over the years. Wasn't there a Giants one, too, from last year that was pretty bad?
Probably.
Someone had a Giants Josh Allen trade, I think. I don't remember exactly what it was.
What else is going on in the chat?
There's a lot
Did
of
you see
discussion.
Anything else today?
Let's see.
The usual?
Yeah.
The chat wants to... It's like AI. We got to talk about it like it knows itself now. The chat wants to be referred to as the bullpen.
The bullpen?
Yes, the bullpen.
I was just about to say, they're coming at you right now. That hey, the chat has a name.
The bullpen.
Yeah. I am a...
But until people know the name the bullpen, we're going to have to call it the chat.
Right. If we just start calling it the bullpen,
it'd
probably catch on. Might have to explain it the first few times. Like, the bullpen, our YouTube chat. Yeah, we could do it, I think.
Yeah, Bulldog calls it the bullpen, I guess. Okay, we can call it the bullpen.
All right.
The chat has become sentient.
I'm trying to figure out the origins of why they're talking about Kenny G and saxophones.
Because I told them we were going to give them a theme song in the chat. We've decided what it is. It's bullpen themed. We didn't have it right there. Do you have it yet?
What does that mean?
Well,
bullpen themed.
Josh had an idea that when we do what's going on in the chat.
Like you mean like a relief pitcher like coming out like of the bullpen like
it won't be
Tommy Trumpets.
It won't be Tommy Trumpets or whatever that guy was. It won't be Enter Sandman.
Yeah.
But Josh had a good idea.
For a good bullpen song?
For the song for like what's going on in the chat.
Okay.
This could be their theme song. Think bullpen, famous entries from a bullpen. When I tell you how Josh referred to this, some of you out there that are old like me will roll over in your grave that's not dug yet. We ready with the song? He referred to it as, you know, that movie where Charlie Sheen comes out of the bullpen. And the song they play is Wild Thing, but it's the cool version of Wild Thing. I shouldn't say like the cool version. Like, you know, the original version's great too. But yeah, they come out to Wild Thing where the whole stadium's singing.
Yeah.
Is this where you tell me you've never seen Major League?
I've seen Major League.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, what's going on in the chat? And the whole crowd singing Wild Thing.
Okay, good. This is better than Enter Sandman or Tommy Trumpets for this. Timmy Trumpets. Perfect.
This is so good.
All right, I'm in.
All right, let's go to the bullpen. They want to trade Josh Allen.
Yeah.
They want to trade Owen Power. They want to, yeah. So we got to get that music bed, whatever. Wild Thing. Welcome to the show, chat.
Bullpen. No, we got to start calling bullpen. Every time now.
Bullpen.
Get a fine jar every time we call it the chat.
A swear jar. And when I get the $20, I have to buy the bullpen a pizza.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Meanwhile, one of the
here we go. Cook and Kincaid for Garrett. There's a from the bullpen.
Are you ready tomorrow for me to ask if we should be talking about trading Dalton Kincaid?
I thought you were going to bring it up while we had Craig on because he was talking about them needing a tight end, that was the first thing I thought of. You're over there like, oh, let me send Kincaid to the Commanders.
I kind of said it in passing at some point today and thought, should we talk about that? Should it be on the table? Why wouldn't it be on the table?
Let's put it this way. If they traded him tomorrow, would anybody think any differently about their offense? Be any more worried about their offense?
I would not be worried about it at all.
Would you think they're even really losing anything from their offense?
I don't know.
They're losing a player who's maybe good.
He's probably good.
But what are they losing from their offense if he's not on the team tomorrow?
Well, they would need another receiver, and you know me, I always want to find a way to get a receiver. So, like,
well, they already need that, though.
I know.
He doesn't subtract for that, right? I'm still good in the middle of the field. I'm still good with Shakir, you know, getting the short stuff.
It's just, look at the assets they've spent to the middle of the field.
Still got a tight end.
And
Knox.
It's Knox, Kincaid, Shakir. If they pay Cook, like the middle short yak passing game has so much invested in it, and the outside is a dead zone. And
yeah.
And Kincaid's not going to ever give me that out there, even though they like to put Kincaid on the outside, and they love to throw deep to tight ends ineffectively.
I was going to say, this
for
a, is
for
where...
An, for an offense, it was really good. The offense was great. I'm sorry.
This is where there's almost confusion on, like, what is Dalton Kincaid? Because this year, I had this earlier, yeah, his average depth of target among tight ends, like, he was 10th highest in the league. You know, it was not... He was at 8 yards A-dot. Travis Kelce, 6.5. Dallas Goedert, 6.5. Trey McBride, 6. Brock Bauer, 6. Guys are even lower than that. Like,
where's Kincaid?
Kincaid was at 8.0. Like, he was higher than a lot of these guys on the year. They were trying to get him
the ball
down the field. By the way, Knox was number 3 in the league for A-dot at tight end. So... like what again? What role is he serving for me? Is he the short stuff? Is he the guy I'm trying to stretch the middle of the field with? Is he the yak guy I'm throwing screens to? What is he doing?
The thing he's not been that was sold is matchup nightmare. He is not that, and I was always reluctant to believe that he would be because a lot of teams have their version of this, so it's not like it's unique. You're not going to go out there and surprise anybody. If you play half the teams in the league, you see a tight end that's primarily a pass-catching tight end.
Here you go. He led all tight ends in the NFL this year in targets of 20-plus air yards.
Kincaid.
Yeah. Deep targets at tight end this year. He was number 1 in football.
Tied
with Brock Bowers.
Tied.
But Bowers had twice the amount of targets. So
I want to read between the lines on that. One more time. Give me that stat. He led the league.
He led the league in targets on throws that traveled at least 20 yards.
Okay. Do you know what the between the lines thing is there? That is the thing that we're not supposed to say about the Bills offense, which is everybody eats dink and dunk and yak, is that Josh Allen wants to throw the ball down the field.
Yes, he does.
Josh Allen wants to throw the ball down the field.
Yes, he does.
And in the AFC Championship game on the final drive, they're throwing screens all day. Josh Allen wants to wing it. Give him somebody to throw it to. He threw down the field to running backs this year. Ty Johnson and Ray Davis for bit. This guy just wants to throw it.
He just wants to chuck it, guys.
You've successfully reined him in and made him the best version of himself, but he still wants to let the dog out of the cage every once in a while.
Yeah.
Dalton Kincaid led tight ends in 20-plus yard targets.
Do you know what the number is, by the way, on that?
Like 10?
12.
Okay.
He only caught three of them. He caught three of them. Like, it was not not effective.
And Allen missed him on a bunch. There's no doubt about that. Allen missed those, and that might be part of this.
It's a confusing player, confusing fit, and a confusing position for what they currently have. So, like, to me, sure, you want to – trading him would only be weird in the sense that they just picked him, right? Year two, like, giving up on a guy that you're not even sure is, like, not a good player after year two is usually what it would be weird about it. But, I feel probably better, more clear. I have more clarity about their offense, I feel like, if they were to trade him tomorrow.
But, again, Kincaid and Knox and Shakir all existing in the same offense means teams will dare you to throw it to the outside.
Yeah.
And they don't have anybody on the outside that threatens anybody right now. So we'll see. Here's a good comment brought up in the chat right now. This segment has been what's going on in the chat, a.k.a. the bullpen. The question was, if Kincaid had done what they expected him to do through 2 years, would Shakir have gotten this deal? Good question. The other part of it is, if they knew what they had in Shakir, would they have drafted Kincaid?
Mm-hmm.
Also a good question. Anyway, I don't think Kincaid's a bad player, but the fit has always been a little odd, and here we are. We've got all of the Bills' assets into non-boundary receivers, and teams are just going to do it again. Single up Keon Coleman. You're going to throw him go balls all day? He led the league in percentage of targets that were go balls.
Yeah.
And Amari Cooper's not under contract. Right now it's Coleman and Mac Hollins and
Samuel.
The offense was great. I know the offense was great. Got to keep saying that, but it's worrisome on some level. Should it be? Whatever. Go get a million defensive tackles and defensive ends. All right, 803-0550. We'll wrap up the show. Hand off to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. If you missed it, Sal's got a lot coming your way from the podium in Indianapolis. A couple of interviews he's done as well. So we'll take you inside. Coverage of the Combine continuing throughout the morning. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.
Breaking sports news airs first here. Guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550. 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
What haven't I gotten to? Hey, did you know that the Philippine Basketball Association has introduced a four-point shot?
I did see that. I also learned, I don't think this is new, that the Philippine Basketball League has a height limit.
Ah!
You're not allowed to be taller than 6'6".
Wow.
That's got to prevent, like, you know, I guess it's to prevent guys like Dwight Howard coming over, like import players, All-American players coming over and just dominating.
I'm looking at the four-point line. I mean, listen, good idea, bad idea. Let's get stupid, however you want to say it. Steph Curry should spend his senior seasons playing in the Philippine League, hitting four-pointers all day.
Yeah.
They got a four-point shot. It does not go to the corners, by the way. So
no,
it's only
the front?
It's
like straight across?
It kind of goes across to the elbow. It's not straight across. Okay. It's just an extended three-point arc, but it does not go into the corners. So you're not going to hit one from the baseline.
Okay.
So defending a four-point shot would be a little easier because of that, I would think, because there's less ground to actually defend.
Yeah.
But yeah, here's a guy hitting a go-ahead four-pointer.
A go-ahead four-pointer.
Yeah. I'm looking for, like, some of the names in this league. If there's any college stars we used to know. Justin Brownlee. Anyway, 4-point shot. Also, stuff to get to. The NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman. One thing to prepare for the draft. We're not there yet because the Sabres are in Operation Win 10 straight to get back in the playoff picture. At the NHL draft this year, Gary Bettman's announcing all the picks. Remember they went away from each team going up and thanking all their fans? It'll just be Bettman saying, from Saskatoon. And he was joking about it. I saw Bettman saying, like, hopefully the names aren't that hard to pronounce. Well, good luck, man.
You're the hockey GM,
You get some tough ones.
Yeah.
You get some tough ones. Also, Bettman was on 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh. I saw Andrew Filippone tweeting this, saying Pittsburgh could host some games when the World Cup of Hockey returns in 2028, in which case we should, of course, ask, can we? Why can't we host some games?
Is it because they think Canada's going to come down and steal it all?
Isn't that a good thing? I mean, tickets are tickets.
I wonder what their reputation is right now for something like that. Because didn't it not go well the last time the World Juniors were here?
I mean, they sold an outdoor stadium.
They did.
And the rest of the tournament...
The rest of the tournament was pretty empty.
And they played at Niagara?
Like I went to a... Yeah. No, that was 2 times ago.
Okay.
I don't know. I remember attendance not being great.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'd love it. I mean, Canada would probably take it over. Right? That would help your attendance. Yeah, when Canada probably. Plays.
All right. That's it for us. Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show is coming up. And we are back tomorrow. Sabres and Canes tomorrow. Combine rolls on. Starting to hear defensive linemen and linebackers saying they've met with the Bills. Last year, every receiver had met with the Bills. This year, it's going to be every defensive lineman has met with the Bills. So we'll have more for you from the Combine coming up next hour with Sal jumping in, providing some stuff for the guys as well on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show next.